So welcome back from lunch, our midday meal. And before we do a brief sitting to begin the afternoon, I just wanted to do the briefest of introductions. We'll do an expanded introduction when she teaches with us tonight. But Jan Willis has joined us. So this is Jan Willis, Buddhist scholar and teacher and friend and colleague. And so I'll introduce her more extensively tonight when she begins her first set of teachings. She'll also be with us tomorrow morning and hopefully with us for some time after that too. So welcome, Jan, and thank you so much for being with us. So we'll do a short sitting before we begin this afternoon. So this afternoon we wanted to formally introduce, we've been doing it all along with each other as well as in the teachings, but we wanted to formally introduce story as not just Dharma, but Dharma teaching. That it's a skill that we can develop in our Dharma teaching. And you may recall that even in the very first retreat with Pam introducing the journey of the Buddha, the stages, the archetypical stages of his life, the calling, the departure, the struggle, the awakening, and the return. These are stories that are not just about the particulars of the Buddha's life, but what we can all learn from his experience. You shared your personal stories in the Four Noble Truths compilation, the book, the volume that you co-created with each other, the exchange of stories. So we've already have a sense that life stories, the stories of our life, is one of the building blocks that create relationships. And no matter how well we know each other or not know each other, there's always more to be revealed so that stories have this ongoing nature to them. They never end. And so it's like the 84,000 gates into the Dharma. It's the 84,000 gates into relationships with each other, the possibility of creating community with each other. And with relationship, that's where a powerful tool of transformation can reside. Because the relationship can hold both the joys and the sorrows, the difficulties. And it's in the relationships with each other that we can build a teaching community. We're not just training community Dharma leaders. We're not just training individual community Dharma leaders. Our intention all along has been to train a community of community Dharma leaders that will support you ongoing way after this program ends. And we're all not just hopeful, but we're encouraged that that's already beginning to happen among all of you. So hearing the stories and being open to them, these stories really are about crossing differences, crossing cultures, crossing genders, crossing all the different kinds of multiplicity of experiences that we have. And as we simply meet the stories for what they are, without needing to judge them, without needing to change them, that is the heart practice. That is the insight practice. That is where the insight into the relationship begins to emerge. We tell stories that cross both internal and external borders, although all those edges that we feel. Stories can be a bridge. Even if we are holding some difficulty or resentments with an individual or community, when we are able to listen, there's a possible bridge across those edges and differences. Stories are also healing. They reveal, the possibility is to reveal an authentic piece of ourselves. It also invites us to align with who we see ourselves to be, that authenticity that sometimes gets distracted by a lot of social convention or external pressures telling us to be a certain way. But if we're telling our own story in our own voice, we're invited to align with that veracity of, what is this life for me? Maya Angelou writes that there is no agony like bearing an untold story inside of you. Clarissa Pinkola Estes writes, stories are medicine. They have such power. They do not require that we do, be, act anything. We need only listen. We did this series of intense diversity trainings at Spirit Rock 10 days ago. Many of you were present for one of the two trainings, and the trainers dropped this nugget that I will always remember, and that is the greatest gift you can give a voice is your ear, your listening. And just to acknowledge some of the complexity and possibly shadow of our tradition, to use that word, I still have my own issues with the language and the word shadow. But many times in our meditation practice, we're told to drop beneath the story. That is such a common instruction. Drop beneath the story. Let the story go. And it can feel that letting go is a little bit of a pushing away, a dismissing. Not unlike what Seb and Gina beautifully sort of guided us through this morning, bypassing the relative reality of our experience for an unconditioned universality and dismissing our particular experience. Many of you have heard me quote this wisdom teaching from the Talmud, because I also feel that it's part of a greater wisdom holding, and that is, we do not see the world the way it is, we see the world the way we are. So the more we are's we hear, the more stories we hear, we actually begin to hear the totality. We begin to hear what is beyond the particular and also connect. We see a little bit more clearly beyond our small selves. And there's that invitation that was given to us this morning of using our relative experience as a path towards the absolute, not negating, not deciding on one or the other, but that we hold both. And that as we begin to see a larger picture, each story contributes to that larger picture, realizing that it is never the larger picture. It is a larger picture. And as we begin to expand that sense of the totality, this is where story itself, the accumulation of story itself, is a practice of anatta. Because we go beyond. But we have to go through, we have to experience the particular in order to sense the, if you use that language, ultimate. And really, part of all of our sharings with you throughout these five retreats in 2 years, is not only to introduce topics that will support you in your leadership, but also to support the transparency of the pedagogy so that you can also teach what we are offering. So how to make storytelling a component of your Dharma presentations or talks? And as Gina began the day with that Parker Palmer quote, it is the intersection of the private and the public. It is a practice of how much oneself discloses. And because it's a practice, you may over-disclose, you may under-disclose and not connect. You may over-disclose and that's the only thing that the audience will connect to, and you know, as opposed to the underlying message or the teachings that you're connecting your story with. All of this is practice. And really to hold it, not lightly, but just to hold it tenderly, that this also you do not need to judge. Stories connect your teachings to your students. They connect your teachings to the Dharma, and they connect your students to the Dharma too. This whole aspect of parable is a spiritual form of teaching in any wisdom tradition. And so, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, there's of course the Buddha's life, the one that Pam brought us through in the first retreat. There's the story of Kisakotami with the mustard seed. There's the story of Angulimala and the 1,000 people that he was trying to kill off. These are stories that hold wisdom and heart, and our life stories hold the same. Rachel Naomi Remen writes, "Everybody is a story. Sitting around the table telling stories is not just a way of passing time. It is the way wisdom gets passed along, the stuff that helps us live a life worth remembering, and every one's story matters. Hidden in all the stories is the one story. The more we listen, the clearer that story becomes. Our true identity, who we are, why we are here, what sustains us, is in this story. In telling them, we are telling each other the human story. And in the Buddhist tradition, the human story is the possibility to awaken, the refuge of the Buddha. Stories that touch us in this place of common humaneness awaken us and weave us together as family once again." Regardless of how differently the stories are lived, there's a common purpose in the sharing itself. So that's just the frame, the contextual frame we'd like you to invite to share story this afternoon. And I'll go through the particular logistics. Again, we're creating a container. There's a quality of ritual in the aspect which we will get to a formal teaching on ceremony and ritual towards the end of the retreat with Jack. Some questions just to, you know, bookmark. As you hear each other's stories, What parts of the story resonated with you and why? Just to notice, it's a mindfulness practice. What did you learn about the storyteller? What did you learn about yourself? And what did you learn that possibly was beyond both the storyteller and your own experience? So just a few, not unlike, you know, when we have guidelines for communication, some prompts for holding this container of story. Speaking and listening from our hearts, that we don't need to prepare our own story. Again, just to be present with the story that's being told. Not just even to the words, but listening with your body. Listening with your heart. How does the story vibrate, land? Please speak from your own personal experience. Please share the generosity of time. We'll have a timer that rings at every 5 minutes, or 5 minutes per person. If you don't have to take up that time, if you hear the bell, just begin to close so that we'll have time for probably the sharing of about 20 folks. There'll be a break in the afternoon in the middle, but we're going to go until a little bit before 5:30. So we're beginning to create that container to last this afternoon. So allowing for as many voices as possible. And again, finding that balance between public and private. Monitor your level of self-disclosure, so to speak. That is a mindfulness practice. Part of the container is the confidentiality. And so I want to expand on that a little bit, that it's not just what's said in the circle stays in the circle, but also if there's something that you want to ask or check in on someone's story after the circle ends, first, to really approach them for permission, because it is a story that they might want to leave behind, or that the timing may not be appropriate. So really, to acknowledge all of that. And for this practice of circle work, it is also a practice of concentration. You may notice yourself going through cycles of both thoughts and feelings, whether they're connected, whether they're disconnected, whether there's joy or sorrow or boredom or indifference. And really to hold all of that in your heart. Not needing it to be different, but allowing yourself to still stay present regardless of those cycles. The stories will not be recorded, so as soon as I stop speaking, the recording will go off. We'll have a break, maybe 15 or 20 minutes in the middle of it when it feels appropriate. The break will be in silence as well. I'll give a 15-minute heads up before it ends completely. And so I want to talk about the form a little bit, because we've been in a large circle before at Spirit Rock, and the form did not work as well for everyone. So we've come up with a form, and this is where, you know, we're adapting as we go, trying to meet everybody's needs as much as possible. And again, it's all an experiment, so please give us feedback if you feel that there's something that could be done the next time around. So Aaron is going to model a story to begin, and when she's done, you will indicate if you're interested in sharing a story by raising your hand. And the microphone, I'll pass the microphone to that first person who tells their story. After that first person tells their story, the next person will raise their hand. Now, given the dynamics of all of us, there may be multiple hands raised. That first storyteller is going to become the the conduit of the microphone. So just know that whoever tells the story first has one added, contribution to make to the story. If multiple people raise their hand, the microphone will not be passed until only one hand is present. It is up to you as a community to work this out. Right? Everybody knows by now the dynamics of stepping forward, stepping back, feeling stifled, feeling unseen, feeling cared for, feeling not cared for. You know the conditions because probably all of us have lived that. This is where, as a community of leaders, you're developing that ability to self-regulate and to honor and to decide, to make a decision, even in the silence, who goes next. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. So you'll be self-facilitating that feature that normally one of the teachers, points to and determines. Any questions about the form, Phoenix?
Could you repeat what the prompt is?
I haven't given you the prompt, the actual prompt. Those were just sort of guidelines. Thank you. So the prompt, any other questions? I'm sorry. So the prompt is, please tell a story from your life experience that has contributed to the deepening of your Dharma. Please tell a story from your life experience that has contributed to the deepening of your Dharma. Any questions on the prompt? So we'll sit for a minute and I'll hand the microphone to Aaron.
I have one question. for the stories?
No, you are self-regulating your time for the stories, but I'm going to set a timer for 5 minutes. So you will have a marker of 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So let's sit for a minute or two. Invite yourself to feel the question and the prompt.
Can you hear me now? So I just noticed that I feel a charge being the first one invited. Okay, let's see. Does it need to be turned up more? Can you hear me at this volume? Okay. So I just noticed that I feel a charge being the first one invited to speak. In this space and in this circle. And as I think about what's contributed to the deepening of my Dharma and how it is to be with you, I really, I think of the land. What comes to mind for me is actually the desert and how my relationship to the desert has been such a profound Dharma teaching for me, and how I remember about 20 years ago now, how being out in the desert was a huge part, really, of what set me on my path in the Dhamma. I was in college, and I was studying cultural anthropology, fascinated by learning about different cultures. And I was studying, in particular, healing traditions of different cultures. But I was tired of studying about them. I was tired of academia. And I quit school, and I decided to go to massage school in Santa Fe, sight unseen. I was 20 years old. And on the way to Santa Fe, I stopped in Zion National Park. Some of you have maybe been there with a friend of mine, and we were camping. And it was my first time ever having been in the land we call the desert. And I had an idea that desert was barren, that it was a place of kind of nothingness or void. And I was so struck by a feeling of feeling unburdened in that land, a feeling of softening and relaxation, and a life that had been lived, as somebody said this morning, trying to outrun my suffering. There was a belonging that struck me. It was I actually remember this moment clearly, of my friend making dinner at our campsite. We were camping by this little stream, and there was this deer drinking from the stream just across from where I was sitting. And something new came into my awareness. It was a new recognition in this life, in this awareness of the kind of belongingness, the interconnectedness that is the truth of who we are. And it didn't come in through my head. It came in through my heart and through my belly. And I remember just sitting in this kind of peace on that land. It kind of took me by surprise. And I went to massage school, was introduced to Tonglen practice. And as soon as I finished, I went with a friend to Canyonlands National Park, the Needles District in southeastern Utah. And it was a time in my life when I was feeling, I actually remember feeling motherless. I felt like an orphan. I felt lost and not sure what to do. And I remember going to this place and these incredible, huge rocks that were like the womb of the earth. They were like hips and bellies and nipples even. And I remember just laying my body in these warm rocks and feeling so held and so cradled. And what became so clear to me on that trip as I was opening to the beauty of the place was that I was part of the place. That the beauty wasn't just out there. That the beauty didn't belong to the desert. That it was actually my own deepest nature as well. And I ended up moving to Durango and began practicing because there was a sense of knowing that I'd only seen a little glimmer of what was so, and that the peace and love I was experiencing in that place was something that could be recognized in a more stable way in my own experience. So it was kind of a back door into the Dhamma. And as I'm here with you, those two trips 20 years ago are alive with me now.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.